All right, I'm back. This is Meredith, the U.S. Program Manager here, and thank you all for joining us during the call. It's 1 o'clock, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Obviously, you know, some people may join late, but we'll just go ahead and get started now. I really want to, well, first let me mention three quick logistical things. There is a chat box here on the Join Me screen. If you remember our previous webinars, it would be great if you all could introduce yourself in the chat box. And if you have any questions during the webinar, you can type them in there, and Scott and I will be checking that. And also to please mute your line when you join so that if there's any background noise, we don't hear it. And yeah, that covers sort of the logistical things. So we really want to thank you for all your help with the last application cycle. It was a great first selection board cycle for us. You know, we got a lot of great feedback on good candidates, and it really, really helped us select a great Class 10, which we are excited to introduce you all to soon. So we just wanted to take this webinar to sort of refresh your memory on some of the stuff you did last time regarding reading applications, as well as give you some updates on what's been going on with Atlas Core and how that affects how you'll be reading applications. So just to sort of briefly go through the agenda, the first thing is that we will have an update on Atlas Core overall from Scott. Then I'm going to talk about the timeline a little bit, the selection board timeline. Then I'm going to go through an overview of the instructions regarding our new fellowship program and how that affects you. And then I'm going to do a brief review of how to read and score an application, as well as talk about changes to the application and challenges we saw last time. And then I'll open it up to questions, and hopefully this will, you know, stay an hour or less. And we appreciate you joining us during what's probably lunch hour for most of you. And so that's how we're going to go. So, Scott, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Great. Can you hear me?
Ooh, you're coming in and out. That we can't hear you.
I think it's started. I'll call back in. I'll interrupt you and do the update then.
Okay, that sounds good. I heard that last bit. So Scott's having some connection issues. For those of you who don't remember, he is in Mexico right now. So he'll be calling back in, and he'll go over the update. So moving along, while Scott's joining back in, I did want to go over the application cycle timeline. So I have posted... The selection board timeline on our Google site. If you just joined, welcome. But please mute your line so that we don't hear any background noise. Okay, great. So if you go to our selection board Google site, I'll be mailing out the link for those of you who don't have it bookmarked. And you go to the second link on the left side of the page called Selection Process Timeline. Here you can see our calendar, and this is more detailed than you truly need to know, but we just wanted to give background on our website for any of you who are curious about how the entire process works. The most important thing for you guys is that, as I mentioned in my previous email, we are moving to a different calendar next year. This year we had our first year having three classes, and those classes began in March, June, and September, 3 months apart. Next year it's going to be 4 months apart, and where the classes are going to begin in January, May, and September. So that means we're selecting for the January class, and our priority deadline is August 15th. That's when we expect most of the applications to be in, by August 15th. So what that means for you is that most of your application reading and interviewing will be between August 16th and September 17th, I believe, yeah. So September 17th will be the initial deadline for you to read whatever applications I've assigned you and to, have conducted several interviews. I've built in some of this time in the back 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of September, knowing that sometimes we do get some late applications that we still want to consider, and I will be following up with you guys about that as we get closer to the end of September. But most of your, about 80% of the application reading and interviewing will be between August 16th and September 17th. So the final deadline will be October 1st, after the initial deadline of September 17th. So that's just sort of an overview of how we're going. The initial process of how we're going to get to having an awesome class of fellows join us in the first week of January, or second week of January, probably. So, great. So it looks like Scott's ready to talk whenever I finish this. So are there any questions before I pass it back to Scott? All right, great. So, Scott, take it away, and I'll let you give an update on Atlas Core.
And Meredith, can you hear me better now?
Yep, I can hear you.
Excellent. I also want to echo Meredith's sentiments that she started out with by thanking everybody for being on the selection board, for taking the time in the middle of the day to call in and listen to this or to listen to the recording later. If you are calling in live, I encourage you to check out the Join Me link, and even to go into the chat box and introduce yourself so that we can see who else is on the call and you can see who else is there. I know there are a handful of fellows that are also calling in, and alumni. That's always very special. We consider this group to be our best volunteers, and really also think it's fantastic that fellows and alumni participate as well. I'm going to give a five-minute update on the organization. I'm literally going to time myself, so I try not to talk too long. As all of you know, I can talk about Atlas Core for hours. For some of you, some of the stuff will be review, but actually there's some exciting new things that we're letting you know first before anybody else. The first is that it has been a big year for Atlas Core, a little bit of transition and a fair bit of growth. Recently, we have come upon some new partnerships and grants that we're very excited about. For starters, as you probably all know, we're about to bring in our 10th class. You know this, of course, because you interviewed the class. That brings our numbers up to 141 leaders from 41 different countries. 10 classes, over 140 leaders. It's quite an accomplishment. We're pretty excited about the network itself and how they're all impressive individually, but even collectively as a group, it's becoming a pretty amazing effort. This past year, we moved to 3 classes a year. Well, as Meredith talked more about the schedule, and basically every 4 months we'll have a new class coming, which is an exciting way for us to even grow more quickly as we also expand to more cities across the United States, such as not just New York and D.C., but Atlanta, Minneapolis, San Francisco, and even more cities in Colombia. We're now in Bogota and Cartagena and may, in fact, be expanding to Mexico City soon. Among the financial partnerships we're excited about is American Express that supported us last year at $50,000. To support our 50 in the 50th campaign. But we recently pitched them on an idea of supporting what we're calling Vision 2015. And the idea of Vision 2015 is that we'd grow to 100 fellows a year by 2015, really strengthening the network. There's a bunch of parts to Vision 2015, from improving the training to other things, not just size. But American Express got excited behind that idea, and they committed to supporting us every year until 2015. So $50,000 a year for the next 3 years. So it's one of our first multi-year grants. It's a great endorsement of our work, and we're really excited to have American Express support lots of strong leadership programs as one of our key partners. We've signed on some other larger strategic partners as well. Some of you may be familiar with the Acumen Fund. It's a great organization that sort of does microfinance, but it's kind of a step above that. And microenterprise and patient capital, they call it, They also have a fellows program with nonprofit leaders from around the world. They decided to join forces with us, and we are helping manage some of the logistics of the Acumen Fund Fellows program, and it's going to create opportunities for us to have our fellows and our alumni connect with the Acumen Fund Fellows and alumni as well. It's a pretty big partnership. There's 10 fellows this year and even some people in Colombia. It's an exciting organization to be working with. Another partnership, which you're going to learn more about on this call as well, is our partnership with the National Endowment for Democracy, specifically on their SIPE think tank links. I won't go into great length at this, but it's another example of us trying to innovate and find ways that we can partner with other fellowship programs so that we can strengthen our fellowship program and also strengthen their fellowship program, ultimately doing a better job of advancing our mission of developing the world's best nonprofit leaders. And then finally, we've also expanded our work in working with the U.S. government. So there was a proposal out there for organizations interested in expanding their work in Sudan to do cultural exchange there, which we applied for and were successful. It is a very large grant. It's over $500,000 for us to bring 14 leaders from Sudan to the U.S. next year. It's a huge opportunity because we, you know, we've never had 14 people from one country coming. We've had almost 14 from India and probably close from Colombia, but that's over 6 years. This is going to be 14 people over three different classes in 2013, and it's going to be subsidized by the U.S. government, which makes it easier for us to place at host organizations. You don't need to know all those details, but the more important thing is to know that we are expanding our, diversifying our funding sources and working closely with the U.S. government here. It's going to provide a lot of growth opportunity for us and a way to really demonstrate how by working with the U.S. government, we can expand our work even more rapidly. And hopefully we do a good job with this, and then we can bring 14 people from Latin America and 14 people from China and 14 people from Pakistan and India and those types of things. So it's an exciting opportunity. It's not even public yet. So we haven't seen anything on Facebook or email about it. We expect to be able to announce this publicly at our welcome party on August 29th. So in general, things are going very well with Atlas Corps. In some ways, it's been a difficult year, but we've been expanding and growing a lot over the last few months. And in general, the organization's going great. So I'm going to be back in D.C. next week and looking forward to seeing those who are in D.C. at the celebration on the 29th and welcoming our 10th class. That's 5 minutes for me, Meredith. I'm happy to take questions at the end, but that's a quick overview. And again, echoing Meredith's comments, real appreciation for all the service you guys are doing, helping making sure that Atlas Corps grows with great fellows.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Well, moving right along, I already covered the application cycle timeline, so I'm going to cover this new fellowship that Scott already mentioned, Think Tank Links Fellowship. I'm pulling up, for those of you who maybe are not, who are listening to this recording later, I'm pulling up the selection board handbook that I emailed out both today and a couple days ago, and I am scrolling down to the third page, which covers the Think Tank Links Fellowship. So about this fellowship, like Scott said, it's a partnership with the Center for International and Private Enterprise, SIPE for short, and Atlas Corps, and it's supported by National Endowment for Democracy, and we're really excited to be partnering with such a prestigious organization, both National Endowment for Democracy and SIPE. This is a program that will place young professionals in think tanks in Washington, D.C. And there's probably, in some ways, it's very similar to the, you know, quote-unquote, regular Atlas Corps Fellowship that you're all familiar with, in that, you know, we're training young leaders to go back to their home countries and apply their skills there. But there are probably three major differences that I just wanted to go over, and so then I can... So then you'll be familiar with it as you're reviewing applications. So one major difference is that this program is 6 months long. As you know, the Atlas Corps Fellowship is 12 to 18 months. This program is only 6 months, and it'll start on all the same, you know, the same classes that we have with the Atlas Corps. So our first class will be in January, and it'll be for 6 months. The second major difference is that this is focused solely on research and writing. You know, our Atlas Corp Fellowship utilizes a number of skills, whether it's monitoring and evaluation or fundraising or research or a variety of things. This will be focused solely on research. The third major difference is the topics that it will be covering. And like, as you know, Atlas Corp Fellowship, a variety of topics, anything from human rights to the environment, whereas the Think Tank Links Fellowship, since we'll be working at think tanks in D.C., or sorry, serving at think tanks in D.C., they will be focusing solely on issues related to democratic or economic reforms. And so anything related to politics or economics, that's what they'll be focusing on. So just to go into a little more detail on the qualifications of Think Tank Links Fellows, they have to meet all the same requirements that Atlas Corp Fellows do, which, and just to review those qualifications, at least 2 years of professional experience, proficiency in English, age 35 or younger, a bachelor's degree or equivalent, and commitment to return home after the fellowship. In addition, there are some other requirements that Think Tank Links Fellows have to meet because the focus is narrower. So one of those requirements is that they have to have at least 2 years of demonstrated research background or experience related to the topics I discussed before, democracy or economic reform. And so there's a list of more specific topics that would be included in those areas, such as, you know, civic engagement, you know, public policy issues like energy policy, microfinance, peace and conflict resolution, poverty. You can look at the whole list here in the handbook. You know, the folks at SIPE have told us that they're not as interested in applicants who are specializing in health or human rights, unless their experience, of course, is specifically related to one of the topics here. So just to give an example to demonstrate what I'm talking about, you know, this program is really not for, say, a doctor who's doing research on HIV, you know, treatment for HIV/AIDS. This fellowship would be a good fit for if someone's maybe doing research on, you know, the economics of a healthcare system or something like that. Or, you know, politics related to disease and epidemics, things like that. So it's the focus is really, like I said, on the democratic and economic reforms, because that's what SIPE and National Endowment for Democracy focus on, not so much other kinds of research like health research. The second additional requirement, or may not, the second additional eligibility requirement is that, you know, not only do they have to have a bachelor's degree, but it would be better if they have it in something like economics, public policy, finance, political science, something that's relevant to this area, that would be a better fit for this program. And then they have two requirements here, and right now I'm on, I think, page 4. So I'm at the top of page 4. They have two requirements that are highly preferable, but not 100% absolute requirements. So they really, really would like someone who is currently employed at a think tank, public policy research institution, or similar organizations. You know, someone who, say, went to grad school and is trying and then applying to this program in order to get a little bit more experience in public policy research, you know, they might be a good fit for this program, but we'd prefer, you know, a better fit for this program would be someone who is currently employed at a research institution, you know, not necessarily in grad school or working for the government or consulting or something like that. And then the second highly preferable eligibility issue for us is that they're employed in their home country, because, you know, this is an issue for Atlas Corps as well, you know, that we want people to return to their home country at the end of the fellowship, but this is especially important that they want to be building up the capacity of think tanks in these fellows' home countries. So, an expat working in a developing country is not an ideal candidate. They might potentially be a fit, but the best ideal candidate would be someone who is currently employed in their home country at a think tank or public policy institution. So what does this mean for the application process? Again still on page 4. Think tank applicants use the same application form as regular Atlas Corps applicants, and they go through the same application process. They still have to take the English test. They still have to do an interview with us.
Hey, Meredith.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I'm getting a little bit of an echo. I don't know if other people are also getting it. If you're speaking into Skype or even a speakerphone, it might be helpful to use headphones.
Okay. I think everyone needs to mute their line.
That could also be what it is. So everyone should hit *6 to make sure their line is muted, and that might be creating the echo. But okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. Think Tank Links applicants use the same application form as regular Atlas Corps applicants, and they go through the same application process. The only addition is that they need to attach a couple additional documents to their application, and I'll talk about that later, but it's basically a writing sample and a few additional essay questions, but the rest of the application is the same. And applicants can apply to both fellowship programs at the same time, so you may see a candidate who's applying to both Think Tank Links and Atlas Corps, or just one of them. And we've added a new question to the application for them to indicate which programs they're applying to, and you'll see that later as we go through the application. So what this means in terms of application vetting is that for the application readings, you know, part of what you're doing, if the applicant has indicated that he or she is applying to Think Tank Links, then you should judge the application by all the same criteria you use for the Atlas Corps applicants, plus the criteria we just talked about, and that is, you know, the criteria on page 3 of this handbook. So so that includes all the regular stuff for Atlas Corps, but also their research experience, what they're currently doing, what fields they're working on, that kind of stuff. In terms of interviewing, I'm still finalizing the interview template that you guys will be following, and we'll go over that in the interviewing webinars we have tomorrow and Monday, but basically, what's going to be is if the Atlas Corps or if the applicant has indicated that he or she is applying to Think Tank Links, then there will be a few additional questions you'll need to ask them and to consider when you're judging their interview. And finally, it is okay for a candidate to be good for the Atlas Corps Fellowship but not Think Tank Links, or vice versa. So just write your opinion of where you think the candidate will be a good fit, and we'll worry about matching them to the right host organization. So, you know, someone who has really strong research experience in democratic or economic reforms might be a great Think Tank Links applicant, but maybe they're not as good for Atlas Corps, and vice versa. If someone is really committed to the nonprofit sector, working in issues of working on health treatments and medical fields, they're not a good fit for the Think Tank Links application, even if they, for some reason, marked off that they're applying to Think Tank Links. So that's stuff to consider in your review as you're going through their application. Are there any questions before I move on? Move on to the next topic and just sort of review how to read and score an application.
Can you hear me, Meredith? I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Is this program open to research assistants or any academics? In Turkey, we don't have think tanks, but we have, most of the young people prefer universities for their research. So is there any kind of criteria for this?
Sure. So if they're at a research institution and I think that could include academics and universities, that they probably would still be eligible. I think they prefer people who are sort of working at think tanks, but, you know, that is something, someone who's probably still eligible, even if they're not necessarily ideal.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Great question. Thanks. So moving right along, I wanted to cover and review how to read, how to access your applications. And I'll be communicating with you guys about, you know, when I assign the applications and all of that. I'll be assigning applications in the next week for you guys to read. So when I do that, you're going to want to log into the Reader portal. And this is all covered in, let's see, page 5 and 6 of your of the handbook. Just to go over a few pointers regarding the, before I go into the Reader portal, the score of 60, remember it's a scale of 0 to 100 that you judge these applications on. A score of 60 is the cutoff, so any score below a 60 will be disqualified from further consideration. Make sure to note, you know, to give comments about their application and also note any red flags in the scoring rubric, and that includes stuff like visa denials, if they have a family back home that would not disqualify them but could make their fellowship more difficult. Those are the kinds of things you might mention in your rubric. And each application should take around 20 to 30 minutes to read. You know, that's including reading and scoring it. So that's sort of our expectation. And I hope you're not spending too long, but also not too short a time. And just a couple quick tips to remember to be detached while you're reading an application. It can be easy to get really excited about some of the awesome applicants we have, but you should be reviewing the applicants the same way you would anyone else. Your overriding question when you're reviewing these applicants would be, would I hire this person at my organization? Would I be willing to pay $30,000 cost share for this person to be a fellow here for a year? So really, you know, to be detached and consider a person's overall application, not just, to really have a high standard for these applications. And then secondly, to trust your instincts. You know, you're all part of this board for a reason. You're all great volunteers, and most of you have experience in the nonprofit sector. So, you know, really trust your instincts regarding these applicants. Scrolling down to page 6, I think we're on now, using a Wise Hive judging portal. So these are login instructions of the Reader portal, which all of you should be familiar with, but just want to review it and refresh your memory. So the address you go to, you can just go to, it's a bit.ly link, so bit.ly/readerportal. I'm going to go to it right now. Okay. And, you know, Zach always used Courtney, one of our selection board members' address in logging in, just as an example. And I'm just going to continue that tradition because I remember her email address. So, again, this is your personal email address that we use for when we're contacting you about selection board stuff. So CourtneyBeale@gmail.com. I enter that with username. And then for the password is AtlasBoard2! All of that is lowercase letters, AtlasBoard2! And again, this is all in your handbook, as well as on the selection board training site on the passwords page. So then you click login, and here are a list of the applications that have been assigned to Courtney in all application cycles cumulatively, not just this cycle. So there's this list of applications here. The ones with the red done button here are the ones that you know, were assigned to her in previous cycles, and obviously she already finished reviewing them, and so they are marked as done. She doesn't need to do anything about them. Just ignore them. And the same goes for the rest of you. I've assigned her two new applications, not necessarily the same ones I'll assign her for the real reviewing, but just to give you guys an example. So the ones that she'll be reviewing would be these ones with a green review button on them. So let's click that button for one of these, and we can take a look at this person's application. So I'm looking at Abhik Bhattacharjee. I'm not sure how to say that. But so here's his application. One thing to mention is that any attachments that they've attached to their application are here at these tabs on the top. The first one, review, I mean, that's just his application. And then he's attached a couple other things here, like his graduation speech, apparently, a couple other things. Those are not required documents. The only required documents are for Alice Corps applicants are their recommendations, and there will be an English test attached to most of these applications. So this person has attached a couple other things here, but you can just ignore them. And actually, even if an English test or recommendations are not attached here, you should not dock them points based on that either, because you know, that could be just a case of Atlas Corps staff, meaning me, has not attached all of the English tests to the applications yet. Because you know, if you can imagine like 150 English tests attaching them to all of them, so don't dock them points if they don't have all the required attachments here. So moving on to the application itself, the first section is contact information, and the second one is fellowship options. This is a new section we add for this cycle. The first question here, please indicate to which fellowship you are applying. You can apply to both fellowships simultaneously. So this person is applying solely to the Atlas Corps fellowship, as they've responded here. We'll look at another application in a bit that has Alice Corps Fellowship and Think Tank Links Fellowship. So this person you do not need to consider for Think Tank Links, but if someone did have Think Tank Links here, you would want to apply the criteria we talked about earlier to their application. Second question we've added for this cycle is that we keep strong applications on file for multiple classes, and we want them to let us know which application cycles they want to be considered for, like which fellowships they would like to be considered for. Not a lot you have to do with that, but just be aware that there may be someone who does not put January 2013 here. I think I'm still going to have the selection board review those applications now, just in case, you know, just to might as well get a head start on those. So not really anything you need to do here except you know, note that whether they're applying for January or not, or I guess make a note if they are not applying for January 2013. And then the rest of it is what you've seen before, except this third section, eligibility quiz for all applicants. You know, we added two questions at the bottom that are optional. If someone's applying to Think Tank Links, we ask them if they're currently employed in a research position and to sort of briefly describe their research. So if someone were a Think Tank Links applicant, and sometimes even people who are not Think Tank Links applicants, you know, just answer this question anyways. So that's what this answer is here. Scrolling down, again, the rest of this is the same, but one more question that is new that I wanted to mention. So in between the skills and the interest areas, basically in the middle of the application, I've added a question. Please specify all computer programs or computer languages in which you're proficient, such as HTML, Java, Photoshop, etc. So if someone has a lot of good computer skills, good technical skills here that you think could be useful to a host organization, that's great. That's a positive thing, and I encourage you to mention that on your review. You know, if they don't have skills, don't worry about mentioning it, but if they listed, you know, a ton of computer programs here, that's great. and they could be a good fit for some particular organizations we have. So, and then the rest of this is what you've seen before. So great, I'm gonna go back to the main screen of the portal and show you one more application. So I'm clicking Fellow App in the top left corner. I'm gonna click on this one, Johansen Rotewa. Again, I'm probably butchering that pronunciation. So here is someone who, if you scroll down to the second section here, fellowship options, the first question you can see, he has listed Atlas Corps Fellowship and Think Tank Links as both programs, you know, that he's applying for, which is excellent. So this is someone who should be considered for the Think Tank Links Fellowship. And just to point out a few differences with his application or a few points on his application where you can see, oh, this is someone who could be a good applicant for Think Tank Links and has filled out his application completely for Think Tank Links. So they're supposed to list, they're supposed to attach a writing sample to their application. If you look here at the top, these gray tabs at the top, you can see, you know, he's actually, I think, attached a couple different writing samples here. This one is a couple publications. You don't need to read this huge long thing because it looks like he's listed a pretty long writing sample here, but maybe take a glance at it and it's actually 79 pages, so definitely don't read the whole 79 pages here, but maybe take a glance at it and make sure that it's a serious writing sample, not just something scribbled down, and that it is serious research he's doing, an analysis of China-Africa economic trade and cooperation. So this is a serious academic article that he's published, and that's fantastic. That's great for his Think Tank Links application. So scrolling down past, back to his application, in the eligibility requirements where we ask them to list, if they're currently employed in a research position, he says yes. Where we ask him to describe his research briefly. He's written a paragraph here about his research, which it looks excellent. And then scrolling down even further, if you look at his employment and his current professional position, he is currently employed at a research institution called Research on Poverty Alleviation, and he describes it. He's doing research on, an economic issue, economic reforms. This is perfect for Think Tank Links. Scrolling down to his skills and interest areas, he lists research as a skill. He lists economic development and business entrepreneurship as an interest area. So, these are the kind of things to look for a Think Tank Links applicant. I haven't read through his application word for word. I haven't scored or anything, but already I'm thinking this is someone who looks like a good candidate for Think Tank Links because of these answers on their application. You would want to look at their writing and their essays and see, this person has good writing skills, or at least it seems like that on my brief skimming of this application. So this is someone who would probably be a good candidate for Think Tank Links and stuff to mention in your review of them. One more positive point for the computer skills and languages. He lists a bunch of things here. I'm not sure of all of these, but I do know that a couple of these are statistical programs that would be helpful for a researcher. So that's even more bonus points in terms of his Think Tank Links candidacy. So these are the kinds of things to be looking for a Think Tank Links applicant. When you are ready to review an applicant, after you've sort of gone through your application, you scroll back to the top, and under their name is this green button that says Add Review. Click on that, and then here is the rubric that, same rubric you saw last time, but there's five criteria here, 20 points each, this is all information that's in the selection board handbook, but there's five criteria here: leadership skills, matching professional goals, cross-cultural skills, professionalism and interpersonal skills, and English proficiency. Each of those are about 20 points. or they are 20 points, and obviously add up to 100. And it, as you enter in, the numbers here, you can see it automatically totals them here at the bottom where it says total score. So you don't even have to worry about pulling out your calculator. It adds them up for you. And then this box here where it says comments, red flags, this is super important and arguably more important than the score itself. Your comments are really valuable to us, and you guys, by and large, did a great job with comments last time. They're really helpful. One thing that was a little bit of a challenge last time that I wanted to mention is that a lot of you focus more on the red flags than the sort of overall application, and that may be because we emphasized red flags yet or so much in our last training, but really both parts of the review are equally important, and if anything, comments are more important. So you should have like maybe 2 to 3 sentences just giving a summary of who this person is, your overall impression of their application, whether it's well written, whether they, you know, they're a strong leader, whether they're articulate and they have concrete examples in their application, and then maybe a sentence about, okay, he's been denied for a visa before, or he's traveled a lot, whatever issues are on the red flags there. And then once you're done with your review, you need to click this green submit button at the bottom here. It's very, very important that you click this submit button, because otherwise it won't save your scores and you'll end up having to, and your comments, and you'll end up having to re-enter them. So it's very important you click this submit button at the bottom here. Let me switch back to the selection board handbook and go through some of the criteria more specifically. I am on, I'm going to be on pages 8 and 9. I just wanted to mention one of these criteria briefly. With leadership skills, this is, in their previous experience, this is something that it would be really helpful to elaborate on in your view, because we have a variety of positions that host organizations send us. Some are more entry level, some are more advanced. We want someone with, 8 years of experience. So there's a variety of positions, and it's helpful for you to describe to me what level someone is at, so that it can help me match them to the right position, because we have had host organizations, specify that for us. So in your comments, it's really helpful if you can not just give them a score here, but even mention in your comments, this person has 2 years of experience and seems like a more entry-level candidate. This person, has 8 years of experience and seems like a strong leader. Scrolling down to, I think this is page 10, the checklist for reading applications. As I mentioned before, here I have the general requirements as well as some of the red flags that we have talked about before. All of these are important. So these general criteria, have they filled out all areas of the application? Are they giving concrete details? This is very, very important to talk about in your comments, sort of your general impression of the applicant, and like a 1 to 2 or 3 sentence summary, who is this person? And then below that, these sections below are sections of the application where there may be either red flags or particular things that you want to look out for. Make sure this person's not a U.S. citizen, whether they've traveled before, their highest level of education. These are some of the things that may be useful mentioning, or they are useful mentioning in a review as sort of either red flags or special things. And then on page 11, we've listed sort of what we nicknamed gold stars of things that like are just super impressive and really bump up an application from good to great. And we went over these before, but there are things like, if they're leading their own organization, if they've worked with a large multinational NGO, they've been in leadership positions. Those are the things that really bump up an application from good to great, and from, you know, a strong applicant to, oh, we have to place this person. So that's an overview of, and a review of our criteria, an overview of how to score them and how to enter your scores on our reader portal. And that about covers all the material I wanted to cover. So I want to open it up now to see if there's any questions from you all, or if Scott has anything to add that I maybe mistakenly missed. Let me know what are your questions.
Hey, Meredith, this is Scott. I think that was great. I really don't have too much more to add. You know, we think you guys all did a great job last time. It's partially just updating everybody on the information, the new programs, and giving some tips to make sure that we are committed to providing ongoing education to make sure that we have the strongest selection board possible. Are there any questions from the crew? For those that are listening to this call later, I really also encourage you not to be please don't be a stranger. There aren't a lot of visuals in this. Most of it was just Meredith going over the selection board book. So you can just look at the book and listen to the podcast. There is one question about when we schedule the interviews. Meredith, can you go a little more detail on when people start scheduling the interviews?
Yeah, so I was planning on sending out an email once we're preparing for the interviewing webinar to include that information in the same email. But basically, I'm going to ask you either Friday or Monday to start entering your times in WiseHive of when you're available to interview. And so once you enter the times, and I'll give you a date range of what dates or what month it is to enter them for. It'll be, you know, basically interviews between probably like next Friday through middle of September, like I talked before about the timeline. So so basically I'm going to need you to enter your interview time soon after I send out this email about that. And then you can start interviewing as soon as, you know, next week, late next week.
Well, one more thing I'd add about the interview times, then Meredith, you can check out the other question in the chat box, is that we've changed the interview times on WiseHive to 40 minutes, mostly to account for the fact that people generally need about 10 minutes to write notes and things like that. When I do interviews with people, I always say, hey, this is going to be about a 20 or 25 minute interview, so we need to get through a lot of stuff quickly to set the pace that people know they have to go through questions quickly. And then interviews always take 30 minutes. But I don't like having interviews back-to-back that are 30 minutes, because it doesn't leave time for comments and setups and technical challenges and things like that. So I think we changed the time slot to 40 or 45. I think it's 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you should interview people for 45 minutes. I would do it for about 25 or 30, just like you have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
There's another question, Meredith, about when they click on the Google Calendar, they don't see the activities events on the calendar. I was wondering if that was going to be updated or added.
That might be something I have to look at separately after the call. I wonder if maybe it has to do with some kind of sharing on Google, like who have I shared it with. I would need to check on that. So let me look into that. May I ask who is viewer five who's asking that question? Okay, Diana. Great, Diana. I'll take a look at that. I thought you should be able to look at it, to view it, but I'm going to have to take a look at how I've shared it and who I've shared it with. And once I've done that, you should be able to see it on our Google site. Can you access the Google site itself? Yes. Okay. Great. So you can access the Google site. It's just the calendar. So I'll need to take a look at that and see who have I shared the calendar with. It's the same calendar we were using last cycle, so I thought it would be the same, but let me check on it.
It might also depend if you're logged in with your Gmail or your Atlas Core one, whichever one we've shared it with, but especially for the fellows, it's easy for us to share it with more than one address.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to mention, as we're just coming up on the hour mark now, and I'm fine with ending the call a little bit early, is that we do have a few more slots open. We're going to, every cycle, take on about 4 or 5 new selection board members. Especially for other fellows or alumni, if you know people are interested, or if other volunteers know people who are interested in getting more involved in Atlas Core. As we've discussed in the past, it's not a small commitment. We basically tell people it's about 30 hours during the year and about 5 hours of training during the year. Hopefully it hasn't been too much more than that for you guys so far. But if you know some people that you want to get more involved in Atlas Core, let Meredith and I know. We have a couple of candidates that we're reaching out to, but really want to make this a strong, diverse group of selection board members, of fellows, alumni, and supporters.
Great. If there's no more questions, is there any feedback about the process that you'd like to tell us of anything that was difficult for you or any feedback about the process overall? You can share it with us here, obviously, on the chat box or you can just unmute your line and ask a question. And, of course, I'm also always available by email, meredith@atlascore.org. You've all received a number of emails from me at this point, so, just let me know, either ask me a question now or save it for later and email it to me.
Great.
Okay.
No, I think we're good. And thank you, everyone, and we'll be in touch. Take care.
Okay. Great. Thanks, guys. I'm going to log off the call and stop recording. But thank you, guys.